Claire's Anatomy. I'm your host, Charlie DeClean. I'm a physical therapist at Bell and Health Tettletown Sports Medicine and Orthopedics, a stone's throw away from iconic Lambeau Field in Green Bay, Wisconsin. On today's episode, we have an interview with Caitlin Greg Goodman. Caitlin is a professional runner, public health professional, and a running coach. Caitlin has an amazing story to tell of her times qualifying for the Olympics in 2016 and 2020 at the U.S. Trials, and a pretty great story of perseverance of her experience at the 2020 Olympic Trials. We also have Nate Vandervest joining us. He is one of our running specialists here at Bell and Health, and he is coming on as a guest host with me to interview Caitlin. So stretch out, warm up, and get ready. This is Players Anatomy. First up is news of the day. The largest injury that we've really never talked about yet is a PCL injury. So the Jets quarterback Zach Wilson is rumored to have sprained his PCL. So that stands for your posterior cruciate ligament. There are four major ligaments of the knee, your ACL and PCL, or your anterior and posterior cruciate ligaments, and then your MCL and LCL, your medial and lateral collateral ligaments. So those are your four, and the one we really haven't talked about much at all in this podcast before is the PCL, which is what he has rumored to have injured. Again, I have no injury news for him specifically as much as just want to talk about the injury itself. Unlike the ACL, most PCL injuries are not surgical, and actually kind of shocking how quickly people can come back for them. And other times it takes several weeks or even a season ending and could be surgical. Again, I have no news on his. This is one of those injuries that is very, very individualized to the person. So again, it sits right smack dab in the middle of the knee with your ACL. They together work on the stability of the forward and backward of the joint. So if your foot is fixed on the ground and your shin bone gets shoved backwards, that's what your PCL stops. So that kind of backwards movement. The ACL stops the forward movement and rotation. The PCL really stops the backward movement of the knee. So usually you are left with some instability in the knee that they can hopefully either try to address with some muscular training and stability training or even bracing. And sometimes over time that can start to kind of tighten up back up on its own. Or again, as mentioned before, could have to be surgically repaired at a later date. Again, very, very individualized. We wish him nothing but the best. As mentioned before, we welcome on Caitlin Greg Goodman as our interview today. Caitlin is a four-time Olympic trial qualifier at the 5,000 meters, 10,000 meters, and the marathon. And she competed in the marathon at the 2016 and 2020 Olympic trials for the marathon. She has an amazing story to tell of perseverance through injury and, quite frankly, bad luck at her 2020 Olympic trial. She is also a public health professional. She works with health policy as a health policy consultant and also as a running coach, owns her own company called Training Joyfully, which we have a link to in the description of today's podcast. And she also started Safe on the Road, which is a nonprofit education and advocacy organization promoting pedestrian and cyclist safety, which we'll talk a little bit about in the closing today, seeing as she herself had a very close call of getting hit by a car and having to dive out of the way, and which caused an injury that really, quite frankly, upset her plans for training and racing. So I hope you enjoy this interview. Again, as mentioned before, Nate Vandervest, one of our running specialists, joined on. So if you hear another voice, that is who you're hearing. Always great to have him along. So I hope you enjoy today's interview. Here is Caitlin Greg Goodman along with Nate Vandervest. All right, Caitlin, thank you so much for joining us. So give our listeners a little background. Where'd you grow up? Where are you from?
Well, first, thanks for having me. I'm Caitlin Greg Goodman. I grew up in Davis, California. Went to college at UC Davis and then finally left after many, many years. Spent the past 7 years or so on the East Coast, and now I live and train in Seattle.
All right. So, and honestly, we have a couple links in the description of today to give a little background of your accomplishments. We mentioned it in the intro. Let's kind of start over. So you went to college where you grew up at University of California, Davis. What was the thing that really got you of like, I'm not done with this, that, you know, I have to give a run at this. You got a great education, could use it. I'm not ready yet. I have to keep running. What was that like?
You know, it's funny because I can pinpoint the exact moment, exactly where I was. I was in the stands at historic Hayward Field in Eugene, Oregon, with my brother Brendan, watching the 2008 track and field Olympic trials. and we were spectating, and just watching those women, my role models, my heroes on the track, and the energy in Hayward Field, I just said, I gotta be here. I wanna do this. So that was in 2008. I graduated in 2010 with the goal of trying to be on the starting line in 2012. Spoiler alert, didn't make it, but kept at it and eventually got back there in 2016 in the 5K and the 10K.
So when it comes to the training piece, obviously you're a well-accomplished high school runner. You're going to college. You have aspirations of going pro. Like, what are the steps that have to happen training-wise, and what struggles did you have with those?
Well, I think the biggest thing is consistency in training and being able to stack season upon season, year upon year, on top of each other to really then ultimately take you to that next level, whether it's, you know, running in college or running professionally or whatever you're training for, qualifying for Boston. It's really stacking these healthy training segments together. And so for me, I think when I saw the biggest breakthroughs from high school to college and then from college to post-college, it was really when I was able to stay healthy and, you know, not have injuries interrupting training. And again, just putting those miles down, specificity of training and, you know, a whole bunch of other things go into that. But I think consistency at the end of the day was the big thing for me to make a jump.
You know, we've done this with a couple other people that we've had that have in whatever sport they're doing, they're at the pro level. But when did it all click for you of what you just said of when, okay, nutrition really, really matters. Training, really being diligent about how I train and being smart with it, but then also even like the sleep piece, like putting it all together. When did that click for you? Was it in college, or was it, you know, what time starting in your pro career?
Oh, I wish it was sooner in my career, right? The things you wish you knew. You know, I would say probably a little bit in college. I was starting to put that together. It's hard, right, in college, because there's so many things you want to be involved in, and, you know, extracurriculars and school and just, you know. So I probably didn't do the best job there on the sleep front, and it reflected in my performance. But when I graduated college, that's when I really, you know, was giving running, you know, putting all eggs in the running basket, and that meant really prioritizing sleep, getting super dialed in on my nutrition, you know, not running for, you know, from class to practice and, you know, grabbing a bar in between. And, you know, that was lunch, right? not the thing you want to do when you're training at a really high level. And so I think after college, I really started to put all the pieces together and prioritize that, and see it as equally as important as the run training that I was doing. And it's all the little things, right? And it's getting smart with strength and getting smart with working with providers. I think, you know, in college we had access to athletic trainers, but it was really post-college when I started getting regular massage and I started working with a physical therapist and sports chiro. And, you know, it's all these people who are on your team. And, you know, team together, everyone achieves more. And that is certainly true in training as a runner.
So I like how you mentioned consistency being kind of the number one thing to go after to reach those goals. But you did mention that there were some injuries along the way. And when we're in the running world long enough, something's probably going to happen. So how did you deal with these injuries? What was your main way of staying in shape through these injuries?
Yeah, I've had my fair share of injuries over the years. Some, you know, a result of overtraining and having to, you know, learn that lesson the hard way and then get smart on the other side and not make those mistakes again. Others, you know, kind of fluke things. Rolled ankles. I tore my hamstring tendon dodging out of the way of a car and a distracted driver. So these fluke things happen. And, you know, like you said, injuries are going to be part of the game. That's part of being a runner. And so I think for me, you know, I really had to learn that there are other ways to be aerobically fit and to advance your fitness when you can't run. And that's hard, right? Runners really love their sport. And, you know, no one gets into running to be an aqua jogger, right? that is my least favorite form of cross training. But I really tried, you know, later in my career to embrace these other forms of cross training to stay fit. And with my hamstring injury, I couldn't run for 3 months. That was the longest I'd gone I don't know, ever not running. And so to embrace other ways to be physically active. And, you know, for me, that was really hard at first, but now I really have come to love the bike. And I got a road bike. I'm out on the roads. I have a spin bike, which is great in the Seattle rainy weather to be able to do it indoors. I'm able to be in the pool and swimming and maintain fitness really, really well. And honestly, I have kind of shifted my perspective as an athlete and as a coach. How I coach runners now too is really to incorporate more cross training so that you can stay healthy and have those consistent blocks we're talking about. So I had to learn it the hard way, but I am a cross training evangelist now.
And you touched on your injuries, and even though you have a team, and you still have to go get them, right? They're not just sitting there waiting to see if you have a problem, no different than anybody. How long is your before the clock ticks for you of, okay, I probably should ask for, I need a little bit more help. This isn't going to, the term we always hear is it's not going to work itself out, right? So what has been your rule of thumb over the, even if it's just in the last 10 years of your career, what has really been your rule of thumb of, okay, this hasn't worked itself out. You know, you mentioned your ankle, your hamstring. What is usually your rule of like, okay, I probably should stop letting this fester and have somebody assess this for me?
Yeah. I would say, you know, if I come out of a workout or a race and you feel a little something, a little niggle, and I just had done a really hard effort, I know it's probably as a result of that hard effort, I'm going to take a day off first and foremost and not be afraid of taking a day off, not pushing through something, just kind of see if that rest will be enough to work itself out. And if I find that the rest day and then dialing back either intensity or dialing back volume over the course of a week, if that's not working itself out, I'm pretty quick to, you know, hop on the phone and get in and get treatment, whether that's a massage, whether that's seeing my physical therapist or seeing my sports chiro, or, you know, in some cases, do I need an image and, you know, I need to see an orthopedist and get an MRI or an x-ray. So I'm pretty quick now because I've been on the other side of it where I've waited too long. And then you know, a month later, you're still dealing with this. It's probably in a worse place now. And you just lost that month. And it was probably a miserable month of running, too. So I try to be more proactive and really jump on it quickly.
So unfortunately for you, you sprained your ankle, you hurt your hamstring. Fortunate for us is you came in for the Bell and Run those years, and our team, you know, got to know you and got to work with you. And in our building, you know, with fancy technology, cameras and stuff like that, we were able to video you. How important was that for you at that point in time to just see yourself run and have another perspective and other people look at you?
Oh, I mean, I can't put words on it how valuable that was. I am a visual learner and I like to have my decisions be informed by data. And so to have that data from the amazing treadmill that you guys have to be able to watch my stride and watch how it's changed over the course of injuries and then also how it's changed as I've come out of those injuries and gone through the rehab and gone through the strength training and to like actually see it on the screen and have that data say, wow, you have rebuilt yourself. You know, this is hamstring 2.0 and it's stronger. I mean, for me, from a confidence perspective, that was huge to be able to see that. And, you know, because as a runner, there's always a little doubt in the back of your mind. But to have the data say, no, you are actually a more efficient runner because you did all the rehab and you did all the strength training and you're coming out of this injury stronger, believe it or not. So yeah, that was huge. I go back and look at those videos from time to time on my phone and just say, wow, yeah, I did that. Okay. I can come back from this if I had another injury.
All right. So my daughter's a junior in high school. She's running cross country. I only deal with pain. I'm not a performance guy. So I'm spoiled that we have people like Nate in the building. And it's been interesting as she's starting to run. She's a classic runner that she has no idea what she's capable of yet, right? Mm-hmm. And learning, I keep telling her, learning to be comfortable being uncomfortable during the races specifically, not during training, but more the races. You know, Nate had given her some advice of just the little mental tricks. So not even so much the tricks of when you're dealing with an injury, but you're in a training run or even in a race and you can just tell like, I'm not having the best day, but I'm not just going to stop. Like I still got to give everything I got. What are some little mental tricks or things you've found that have been helpful over the years for you to help you not just
this is just going to suck today, to just try to find, get to another level.
Yeah. Oh gosh, I'm still working on it, right? I think we all are. But yeah, I have a younger brother who's not too much older than your daughter, and I am trying to instill in him all the things I wish I knew when I was that age, so I could have been had a better mental game when I was a high school or college athlete. And so I think for me, and maybe it's just that age range, right? You see things really in black and white, and it's like things are going great or things are terrible. That's how it is as a teenager. And in running, you know, if you're having a good race, that's great. But if things are starting to go south, it's kind of game over. And so I've tried to help my brother Bryce and you know, younger athletes as well, kind of say, well, there's a lot of shades of gray. And it's important to not just see, you know, oh, I had a bad mile. Oh, the race is over. Especially once you're a marathoner. All the marathoners know if there's going to be a bad mile in there. But the next one might be a great mile. And so I think just kind of being open to the possibility that there's something great just around the corner. And so if you can just stay in it for a little bit longer, keep saying yes to, you know, the pain of racing, not injury pain, but the pain you're experiencing in racing, and say, can I say yes for 30 more seconds? Can I say yes for one more minute? So some of the mantras that I'll use are stay on it, stay in it, stay on the pace, stay in the race. And so I will kind of repeat that to myself when I'm in the middle of some hard miles. Keep saying yes. That's one I will use again and again. And then I tell myself to be relentlessly positive. Because I think in high school, again, when, you know, things are super high or super low, high school is a dramatic time. And so I wish high school Caitlin could have been more positive. And so be relentlessly positive in racing. That is one of the ones I use as well.
So take us to the start line. Right, where we all watched the Olympics this past summer,
which was awesome.
And these athletes are so composed, you know, they look like machines out there. And us mortal runners look at them and think, man, I would be maybe losing my mind. What is going through the head of these pro athletes, though, when they're on the big stage like that? And is it that much different than the normal runner?
I think we're all the same out there, right? I think at no matter what level you're at, there's going to be some element of, you know, a little bit of pre-race anxiety and stress. And I don't actually see that necessarily as a bad thing. That anxiety and stress means that you care. Like, you want to have a good performance. And so if you can try to harness some of that nervous energy and flip it and use it for good and use that energy to propel you to that performance you're seeking, it's hard to do, right? It's easy to say that and much harder to do in practice. So I think behind that, you know, kind of calm, cool face that you might see on the start line that as they're panning the camera across the start, there's probably millions of butterflies in all of those stomachs of those athletes. But I think trying to find that ability to harness that nervous energy, that, you know, I certainly get terrified on the start line, so much so that, you know, sometimes I'm like, man, I'm going to be sick on the start line before the gun even goes off. I'm so nervous. And so I just, one of the skills I learned from a sports psychologist I worked with was to do some centering breathing. And so if I'm, you know, feeling like the anxiety bubbling up, I just try to take a few deep breaths. I like to do it like laying down somewhere, so not great on the start line, but maybe before you go to the start line, you know, before you get to the chaos of, you know, the starting corral, find somewhere quiet, just lay down for a minute, take a few deep breaths, shut your eyes, slow down your breathing, slow down your heart rate, and try to bring that level of calm then when you do go to the start.
That's great advice. We had you've raced at a very high level now for a good 8 to 10 years. And honestly, when I was doing my research, you know, I told Nate offline, I'm like, you know, I'm upset. I love the Olympics. I'll watch anything, competition, literally anything. But one of the things that came up that I thought was interesting, I watched more Olympic trials this past year because of the pandemic, that there wasn't much to do. This idea of standard A or A standard, B standard for certain events. And I know it's not for everything, but for long distance running, it is. What does that mean in the Olympic trial terms?
Yeah, our sport can be complicated in our qualifying procedures. So to qualify for I'll use the Olympic Trials Marathon as an example. There's a B standard and an A standard, and both get you to the Olympic Trials. And the A and B standard just determines, if you have the A standard, you get to start a little bit closer to the front of the course or of the race. And then sometimes there's a differentiation in the support that you receive from the national governing body to go to the race. And then on top of the trial standards, there's the Olympic standard, which is the standard that you actually have to run if you want to not just go to the Olympic trials, but actually go to the Olympics. So those folks who are trying to make the Olympic team not only want to have the A or B standard out of the way, you want to have run the Olympic standard as well. So if you want to go to the Olympics, you have to have the Olympic standard and finish in the top three. That is the rule for track and field and the marathon.
So as we get older, we hopefully have learned, and lots of times painfully learned from our mistakes. What are some of the things that you know now that you wish you could have applied 5 years ago or 10 years ago into just training and overall workouts?
Oh, gosh. I would have been a lot better if I'd learned these lessons earlier. Well, I think we were touching briefly on the importance of not just the run training, but all the things that surround it. And so I think for me, when I really got serious about my sleep and my nutrition, that's when I saw some big performance gains. It sounds so simple, but when I started eating breakfast before a run, suddenly those runs went so much better, and I was recovering better after those runs because I was going into those runs fueled, not just rolling out of bed and getting out the door. And I recognize that's the reality sometimes when you're running at 5 a.m., you don't have time for breakfast, but even just, you know, grabbing half a banana before you get out the door so your last meal wasn't, you know, 8 p.m. the night before. And equally as importantly, refueling after the run. In college, it would be, you know, you finish practice, you don't even have time to shower, you're just, you know, getting to class and, you know, showing up all sweaty and you haven't eaten anything. And you've just asked a lot of your body in training, and your body's asking to be refueled. And so I think, you know, as I got older and got smarter about that, just planning ahead and making sure that I had some nutrition with me, that I could get something in my body within 30 minutes of finishing so that I could kickstart that recovery process. If you go in my car, there's, you know, Picky Bars, my bar of choice, you know, everywhere. I think there's two in my backpack right now. I never go anywhere without a snack because I know I'm asking a lot of my body as an athlete, and I want to be able to give back to it with fuel. And then the sleep piece, you know, is so important. And in high school and college, I was one of those people who slept maybe 6 hours a night. And, you know, you can really pinpoint when I started sleeping, you know, 8 to 9 hours a night and, you know, track that with my performances, you know, pretty easy to see the correlation there.
Yeah. You touch on a little bit of the, how far do you plan ahead? I mean, you talked about how you became structured with your, not only with what you ate, but with sleeping, but when you start setting up your training schedule, and you're also a running coach. So, I mean, you're not only doing this for yourself, but you're also doing this for others. How far ahead do you really try to plan ahead? Let's even just say you personally, so not with your clients, but not only your mileage that you're going to do, but also even meals. Like, how far ahead are you actually planning?
So on the mileage front and the training front, I'd like to always have kind of the 30,000 foot view, and I'm looking kind of 3 to 6 months out. What are the intermediate goals leading up to my A goal race? And have that kind of long game in mind. But I also then, you know, try to really play the short game too, and be willing and comfortable changing things within the week. So I might have a vision that I want to run 20 miles this week, but if it comes up that, you know, I haven't recovered from my midweek workout, or there's a blizzard and running 20 miles in the blizzard might not serve me, I'm trying to be really willing to be flexible and, you know, massage the training plan within that. And then on the fueling and nutrition front, I've kind of gotten into that, women in their mid-30s love a meal plan. And so I am on that meal plan train. And so typically, you know, on Sundays, I'm sitting down with my husband and saying, okay, what are we thinking for the week? And knowing that, okay, I'm going to be doing a workout on Wednesday and a long run on Sunday. So trying to plan meals accordingly with those workouts in mind.
So we all know that running has its mental challenges. And I think you went through a fairly decent sized one at the Olympic trials in Atlanta. As here we are, we're tracking, we're watching the event, and all of a sudden there's no tracking on Caitlin. And I just figured, well, you know, glitches happened, the bib didn't pick up, whatever. But then I saw pictures on Twitter and I couldn't believe what had happened to you in that race. And take us through what happened. How did you feel at that exact moment? When did you know this isn't right? Like, take us through that a little bit.
Yeah, that was the total, you know, throw plan A out the window, throw plan B out the window. This was not anything one would expect in a race. I was a half mile into the Olympic Trials Marathon. For those who watched it, it was pretty crowded at the start. There were over 500 women qualified, which was the most ever. It was amazing, but it made for a pretty crowded and chaotic start. And so I got tripped about a half mile in and went down. you got 500 determined women running, you know, towards you. And so I got trampled and was able to get back up again and get back to the front pack and try to compete as long as I could. When the tracking stopped, that was me stepping off the course after finally kind of having to acknowledge that there were some injuries and I the adrenaline had worn off by that point. I think when I was, on the ground a half mile in, it's not something you prepare for, right? You prepare for a race plan where the race goes out fast. You prepare for a race where it's slow and tactical. You prepare for all types of weather, but you don't ever really think about, I'm going to get tripped and fall and stepped on. And so I kind of had two choices. I could sit there and, feel sorry for myself and that be the end of my Olympic trials experience. Or I could say, this is it. This is, you can get back up again and keep going, because those are really the only two options. And staying on the ground wasn't one that I was going to be comfortable with. That wasn't the story I wanted this experience to be. So got back up, put a smile on my face, because what else are you going to do? This is life. This, this is, as we've all seen in the last year and a half, bad things happen. And we have to learn to pivot and adjust. And I think I learned from that race and have seen it carry out, in this pandemic time, is if you can try to find joy and find some positives amongst all the trials, whatever they are, you're going to come out okay on the other side.
And how long did you train for that race? Like, you just got done talking about how you plan out. That was the end goal, right? That was the big one. How long were you actually training for that race?
Oh gosh. I mean, the training for that particular race, you could say was 4 months of focused training, but really this was, 12 years of thinking about this moment. So yeah, this was a really important race in my career and, as a life accomplishment. So yeah. It was
a big deal. It's funny. We talk with our patients all the time. Every day we have people coming in here that are getting news of you're having surgery.
Yeah.
And every one of our physicians say the same thing. Physically, I'm not worried about you.
Yeah.
Physically, you're going to do great. The mental battle is the piece that's going to be the hardest. Physical will be easy. Physically, you're going to blow through this. What are some tools you really used to kind of get yourself over that? Because that's, again, it wasn't like, now I have to go to a different race to qualify for Boston. This was the Olympic trials that only comes around every 4 years. What are some things you did to be so positive? Like, I'm sure you had a pity party, as you deserve, but what did you really use to get over it?
Yeah, I think, we talked earlier about the hamstring injury I had, and I think in the hamstring injury, I really had to build those mental skills of learning how to adapt and adjust and work the problem and course correct as things come up. And so I think in going through the challenges of an injury, being able to build that mental resilience over time, and then practice it, right? Like it's a muscle that you have to flex and you have to train. And so, I think had this Olympic trials incident happened, pre-injury,
I don't know, maybe I would have, you know, stayed on the ground, or, you know, I would have been, you know, I would have just stepped off the course right then and just said, okay, well, we're done a half mile in. But I think having gone through some challenges athletically and had to learn to work the problem, and having done it, you know, kind of with a bad attitude at times, and then having to learn that, wait, this negativity and this anger about the injury isn't really serving me. So how do I find a silver lining somewhere? How do I find something positive somewhere out of this injury? You know, learning to do that through the hamstring injury then enabled me, I think, to be able to get back up in Atlanta and run on a, well, Nate saw the pictures. That ankle probably should not have run 13 miles. And, you know, I think it really was just, you know, tapping into joy and the experience itself. I really wanted that experience to be a positive one, and I wanted to be the narrator in the story. I didn't want the story to be about the black eye and the ankle and the, you know, the injury. I wanted it to be one of, okay, you got knocked down, but you can get back up again. And I think that's really applicable to being on, you know, in surgery, or losing your job in a pandemic, or, you know, whatever challenge we're facing. You know, we all are finding challenges athletically and in life. And so I think that's, I didn't realize quite how quickly those lessons from Atlanta would become applicable in this last, you know, year and a half. But yeah, I think if you can just, yeah, try to find that silver lining, try to have a, you know, attitude of gratitude and positivity, going back to that, be relentlessly positive.
So one of your mottos is, you know, run joyfully, right? So what advice do you have just for the running community of how they can keep doing this, how they can have fun with it?
Yeah, I think, you know, I would say I would be naive if I said all runs are joyful, right? You guys train in Green Bay. I imagine half the year runs are not so joyful if it's hot and humid, which I have experienced at the Bellin Run, or, you know, cold, snowy, frozen. But I think for me, running joyfully is really about all of those runs collectively, right? It's the beautiful runs with where you see the sunrise, where you see the sunset, or you're out with your buddies and your training partners, and you just have one of those great runs. And then it's those mundane runs in between, or it's those times when you're not running and you're cross training so that you can get back out there for a joyful run. And it's taking all of those experiences collectively and saying, I'm here, I'm showing up, I'm in it. And being ready for the next run could be the great one. It's just like we were saying in the marathon, it's like the next mile could be a great one. And so being open to that possibility that your next joyful run or your next joyful moment is just around the corner. So keep showing up.
Awesome. Anything we missed? Anything else you want to leave us with? Anything else we missed that you think of?
I think I'm good. Thank you guys so much for having me.
Thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it. And you're our keynote speaker for the Bellin Women's Half. I believe when this airs, it'll have already passed, but get involved. We have a link to your running coach, the Run Joyfully, and all of your social media handles as well. So reach out, engage, and it's been a pleasure, Caitlin. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Charlie. Thank you, Nate.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Caitlin Greg Goodman. She has an amazing story to tell, especially her story of perseverance through the U.S. 2020 trials, Olympic trials for the marathon. Just an amazing story of perseverance. Great story to tell. I included a link to Caitlin's website, Running Joyfully, and also an article that she wrote about why she has chosen not to run professionally during the pandemic. That is a really good read. She did a fantastic job with that. Well, we're nearing the end of today's episode of Players Anatomy. I want to thank you again for listening. If you like what you heard, hit subscribe, tell a friend. We continue to try to grow our following and our listening. To keep up with everything that is Bellin Health Titletown, just search at Bellin Health Titletown and you will find us on any social media platform. And finally, Charlie's Cut. So today I thought with everything that Caitlin talked about, I thought it would be fair to talk about pedestrian and cycling safety. And she is obviously, I mentioned in the intro, she started Safe on the Road, which is an organization that really tries to promote pedestrian and cycling safety. I know in town here, Peter Flukey is a gentleman we've done some work with that is a huge advocate for everything that is Wisconsin for pedestrian and cycling safety. But if you are not a runner, walker, or cyclist yourself, then maybe this isn't as well known to you, but I feel like not a month goes by that we don't have an adult or a child getting hit on their bike or running because of people just flat out not paying attention, or because the road or the system we have set up is just not creating as much safety for our walkers and runners. All I ask is when you're driving, please, 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 especially when you come up to crosswalks, take your time to look both ways. Be looking for cyclists and runners, not just other cars, because too many times we look quick, or you're peeking down at your phone because you're sidetracked, and we hit somebody. And Caitlin's a great story of this. I mean, Caitlin's career, quite frankly, as a professional runner, was put in major, major jeopardy because of being hit by a car. And she was lucky enough to jump out of the way, but it caused a soft tissue injury for her hamstring because of it. She talked about it in the interview. That could have been avoided. Could have been avoided. And honestly, sadly, again, we see this every single month in the state of Wisconsin. So please, 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 when you're driving and you come up on a crosswalk, be on the lookout for runners, be on the lookout for cyclists. Let's keep our community safe and help people stay active and not be fearful of getting out and being active. Well, thank you again for listening. I'm Charlie DeClean, and we'll see you next time on Players in Running.